So we left off in the previous year that there were two different halachas that were appearing in the Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us that if a person got wet, he was walking in the street and his clothing got soaked because presumably it rained on him or because he walked and fell into a puddle. So the Mishnah says that there are two things that are true. Number one, he's permitted to continue walking. He doesn't have to worry. We weren't quite sure what he doesn't have to worry about, but he doesn't have to worry, as the Mishnah said. And number two, that if he now wants to go hang up the clothes to dry, that becomes potentially a problem. That's going to be raised an issue of Marisayan. If he hangs up the clothes to dry, people are going to think that he actually washed the clothes in Shabbos, which of course would be also. So the Mishnah tells us that even though there's a prohibition of Marisayan, it only applies in a place of public where people are actually going to see him. Private, so at least according to the Mishnah, Marisayan doesn't apply. I didn't say we passed like this Mishnah yet, but those are the two statements in the Mishnah. So in a certain sense, two kulas. Number one, you're permitted to continue to walk. And number two, you're permitted, at least under certain circumstances, if it's private, nobody sees you, to hang up the clothing. So we spoke a lot in the previous year about what's the chiddush number one. What would I have thought the din is? Why would I have thought that you have to somehow take your clothing off right away? So we showed him, Achlekes, and we showed him whether it's... what exactly the issue is, what exactly what we theoretically concerned with. Either we were also concerned with Marisayan, maybe people are going to think that you washed the clothes, but they see you wearing wet clothes. Or maybe the reason is people are may think that you may have to come to squeeze out the clothing. Maybe it'll be chashash of schita. So at the end of the day, it's mutter. No matter what the chashash would have been, at the end of the day, it's mutter. Why isn't it a problem of schita? So the Mishnah Berurah was searching for a reason. If, after all, we know that there is a general prohibition of schita. You're not permitted to handle wet clothing on Shabbos, with the exception maybe of the towel, because that's darka b'kachta, not necessarily squeeze, because people don't mind when it gets wet. So why are we not concerned with schita? So the Mishnah Berurah said one of two possibilities. Either because you're already wearing the clothing, or because you don't have any other option. You don't have any other clothing to wear, so the other option is to walk around with no clothing. So because of one of those two reasons, Chazal lifted the otherwise prohibition. But the starting point of the Mishnah is that if not for the extenuating circumstances, one would really not be permitted to handle wet clothing, to wear wet clothing on Shabbos. And the reason being, because we're afraid, Gezeir Shema Yizchot. It's based on this that the post can then continue and say, well, if you're not allowed to wear wet clothing under normal circumstances, so basically the wet clothing is off limits. You're not allowed to wear it, and you're not supposed to be handling it. Everything is included in Gezeir Shem Yitzchot. So now you have an item on Shabbos that pretty much is off limits. You can't wear it, you can't move it, you can't touch it, so you can't handle it. So we call that Muktzah. That's another way of saying it, it's Muktzah. The same way if you have food, that's asa b'achila, asa b'hanoah, I can't eat it, I can't give it to the animals, I can't give it to the goyim, so it's worthless, it's a piece of junk. The ultimate muktzah is what's called eitzim yavonim. If you have just sticks and stones lying around, so that's for sure considered to be muktzah. We call muktzah, a lot of things we call muktzah. If something is off limits for this reason, for that reason, the other reason, so we also call it muktzah. But the ultimate, the prototype of muktzah is something which is mamish, no use whatsoever. Eitzim yavonim. So here you can have something which, it's an article of clothing, it's hard to call it Eitzim Yavonim, but for all practical purposes it has no use, because the Gezeir Derabanan kicks in that prevents you from handling it. So the question becomes, well, what is added by the fact that I just said it's Muktzah? If I can't use it because there's a Gezeira, I can't handle it because there's a Gezeira Shem Yisrael. So what exactly was added to this problem by declaring it to be Muktzah? So the Mishnah Berurah has a very big Chumrah. I don't think I put the Mishnah Berurah on the Marmakamas, but the Mishnah Berurah has a very big Chumrah, where the Mishnah Berurah suggests that based on the rules of Muktzah, wet clothing is going to become even more problematic than we thought it was. There happens to be a detail in Luchas Muktzah that's called Migo Dis Katzoy Leben Hashmashos Is Katzoy LeKol Yom. Once something was Muktzah, when Shabbos or Yontif began, so even if the reason why it became Muktzah no longer applies, it retains its status of Muktzah. So let's say, for example, a classic example that the Gemara has in the third parak of Masechet Shabbos, there is a halacha that if I have a bowl of oil, a cup of oil that's burning, so I'm not permitted to remove some of that oil while the flame is burning. The reason being, removing some of the oil from the flame is considered to be part of the malacha mechabeh. I'm causing the flame to go out a little bit earlier. That's what's called mistapik mishemen shebeneir. Just taking some of the oil out while the flame is going is clearly prohibited by the halacha. What if Friday afternoon comes, I light my candles, I have my big bowl of oil that's burning. Friday night comes and the candles are still burning. I wake up Shabbos morning, obviously the candles went out already, but there's still a little bit of oil left behind. And I'm a little bit short Shabbos morning for salad dressing, so I want to take some of that oil and use that oil on Shabbos morning. So if you would have asked me, I would have said, what's the problem? I said, it can't be an issur of kibbuy if there's no flame anymore. The flame went out the night before. What could possibly be the issur? So the Gemara says, no, it's still a problem. Because when Friday night, when Shabbos began during Ben HaShemashos, that oil was off limits. If I would have wanted to take that oil when Shabbos began, that would have been asur mishum kibbuy. Since that oil was off limits when Shabbos began, it retains its status of being off limits for the duration of Shabbos. Even if the original reason why it became asur doesn't apply anymore. That's what's called Migo Diskatzer Ben HaShemashos Diskatzer L'Kol Yoma. Once something was Muktzah when Shabbos started, it remains Muktzah, not Yom, but literally, but until the end of this particular Shabbos. So it comes to Mishnah Berurah and says, what would that locha be if a person has clothing that was wet when Shabbos began? On Friday afternoon, the clothing was wet, and Shabbos starts, the clothing is still wet. So if he would have come and asked the Shaila at, let's say, Shkia today, I don't know, 5:40, he would have come and asked the Shaila at 5:40, can I move the clothing? So he would have had to say, no, you can't move the clothing, because they were Shema Yitzchak. But now, by Shabbos morning, the clothing has long dried, so now he wants to know, can I move the clothing now? Can I wear the clothing now? So we say, no, you can't wear the clothing. So the guy asks, why can't I wear it? So what's the Gezeirah Shema Yitzchak? It's dry. So he says, you're right. There's no longer Gezeirah Shema Yitzchak on dry clothing, but Hilchas Muktzah kicks in. Since this clothing was off limits when Shabbos started, it retains its status of being off limits for the duration of Shabbos, even though the reason for the original prohibition no longer applies. That's the din of Muktzah. Now, Mishnah Berurah just makes the jump. Everybody agrees. I mean, it's machlokes ha'tanaim, but we pask in the halacha about the case of the oil that itaka remains also for the duration of Shabbos. So says Mishnah Berurah, what's the difference between the case of the oil and the case of the clothing? It's all the same thing. Migo diskatzoy kicks in. So the other Mishnah Berurah paskins la'alacha. One has to be careful about this. We have the shayla fairly often. People are sometimes throwing things into the wash right before Shabbos, and they quickly take it out right before Shabbos, but it's not really dried before Shabbos. It's too wet. How wet is considered to be wet? So the poskim say, if you touch it, your hands get wet to make something else wet. That's soaking wet. Something's a little bit damp. It's probably not so much Gezeirah Shem Yitzchak. But sometimes you have clothing that's mamash soaking wet, and it's drying out as Shabbos is beginning. And by Shabbos morning, you're hoping the article will be dry. Mishnah Berurah is not going to help, because since when the moment of truth, when Shabbos began, it was Muktzah, it remains Muktzah for the duration of Shabbos. So notwithstanding this Pesach in Mishnah Berurah, the Shmir Shabbos Gochas, the quotes from Shlomo Zalman, who questioned this Pesach. Shlomo Zalman said that maybe this is not the equivalent of the case of the oil. The oil was usur when Shabbos started. It was off limits under all circumstances. There is no way in the world a person could ever get access to that oil that's inside a burning cup of oil, because any taking of that oil under any circumstances will be an outright violation of kibbuy, of extinguishing a flame. Hilchos Muktzah means when something is usur, your hands are tied, it's not accessible, it's usur, lagamri, finished. No answers or no exceptions to the rule. Then we label it as Muktzah and it retains its status of Muktzah for the duration of Shabbos. In the case of the clothing, a guy's got soaking wet clothing when Shabbos starts. Imagine that he realizes he doesn't have any clothes to wear that Shabbos. It's his only Shabbos suit, his only Shabbos shirt. He realizes that he has mamish nothing to wear. The poskim say nothing to wear means you have no Shabbos clothing to wear. So the guy has mamish nothing to wear. So then we learned it's a Mishnah, at least the way one version of the Mishnah Berurah was. The Mishnah tells us that Mishnah Nishra Kelev B'Mayim, if a person's clothing got soaked on Shabbos, no problem, he doesn't have to worry about Gezeirah Shem Yitzchak. Why is there no Gezeirah Shem Yitzchak? So the Mishnah Berurah gave us two reasons. One reason we spoke about on Wednesday was, well, he's already wearing the clothing, so we're not mechuyev to take them off. Well, the other reason was no. He would even be permitted to put them on because he has nothing else to wear. There are extenuating circumstances that Chazal lifted this prohibition of Gezeirah Shem Yitzchak. Now, it doesn't mean that I personally have those extenuating circumstances, but I could have had those extenuating circumstances. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, whenever the possibility exists that this is not outright asur, then the whole muktzah doesn't kick in. What if somebody would knock on my door Friday, b'drom erev Shabbos, and say, listen, I don't have a shirt to wear, the only shirt. Can I borrow that soaking wet shirt? So we would say yes. That's extenuating circumstances. Misha in the Bugan Machairim, Chazal were willing to give you the green light to lift the prohibition of Gezeirah Shem Yitzchak. So says Rav Shlomo Zalman, since the possibility of Gezeirah Shem Yitzchak doesn't exist when Shabbos started, now it's true, Shlomo Zalman's maskim, 99% of the time it will apply, but since that outside chance exists that it wouldn't apply, that's enough to undo the muktzah issue. You can't say something is muktzah if it's sometimes mutter. Muktzah means I can't use it at all. There's no way in the world for me to do anything under the sun with eitz and b'avonim, with oil inside the salad bowl, into the candle that's burning. there's nothing at all for me to do with this item, then and only then it becomes muktzah. If I can find you a kula, 1 in 1,000 chances I can find you a way to be mata this, that's not called muktzah anymore. So Shlomo Zalman's Taina is an objection against the Mishneh Berurah. In a certain sense, it's a question on the Mishneh Berurah Minei Ubei, because it was the Mishneh Berurah himself in the Shaar Tzion who on Wednesday was the one who introduced the kula of Ein L'Pugad Macher. He's the one who said in the first place that the reason why it's mutter is because you don't have any of the clothing, which opens up the window of possibility that maybe that could undermine, that could undo the entire muktzah issue.
So do you think the Mishneh Berurah has a more subjective view of muktzah, that like something could be muktzah for you
but
and not for me?
It's Pasha, it's not that way. Pasha in the Gemara, it's not that way. The Gemara talks about the possibility if I have something that's roi for other people, if it's realistically roi for other people, that could also be potentially undo the unravel the din of a muktzah.
What about an item that you could change, like if you you could designate like a rock as a doorstop?
Okay, no. So then it has to be done. There are specific halachas how to do that. It may not be enough just to say I'm doing this. You know, I'm going to use that rock. Maybe I have to physically use it. I have to move it. I have to do something before it. But here, when Shabbos starts, I didn't do anything to these clothes. These clothing is literally off limits.
So Shlomo Zalman actually concludes that I could wear those clothes
for money? I don't know. I don't know how strong the footnote in the Shmir Shabbos is. I don't know. I can't say. In the olden years, you know, it used to be, Rav Shlomo Zalman was a God who was very, very accessible. I mean, if you remember back in the years when Rav Shlomo Zalman was like, you can mamash, just go to Shai Chesed, just go to his minion, and you can ask him anything, mamash anything under the sun. So my daughter told me she's going to be davening in the Groshul, the Shabbos. So in the old years, it would have been 20 years ago, so mamash got up to Rav Shlomo Zalman and asked him any Shaila, anything you want. But Chaval davening, I don't know, I can't answer that, I don't know. But I can tell you the following story, that I was actually presented with the Shaila, and I've had Chalisha's Adas for the last 20, I don't know, over 25 years or so, about the Psach that I gave under circumstances. Once I saw this kula, so to speak, of Shlomo Zalman, but maybe if you're right, maybe Shlomo Zalman himself wasn't Mekil, so maybe I shouldn't have such Chalisha's Adas. But I'll tell you the story. It goes back to, I remember, it was Pasha's Matos Mase. Exactly, you'll see in a minute exactly what I remember which Pasha it was. It's a hard Pasha to forget, especially if you're laning it twice, but I'll tell you in a second what happened. I was learning in Keren B'Yavneh, and it was the end of the year, right before Tishba, Pashat Matas Masay, and they used to send some bachar from the yeshiva to go visit the boys who were in the army. You know, the boys were in the Hezder groups, so they would have little rotations and send some of the bachar to go spend Shabbos with them, from the Vitera and the Vichizak, etc. So it was the week of Pashat Matas Masay, and they wanted to send a delegation of boys to go visit some of the bachar in the army. And they specifically needed a balkari, because Matas Masay was a good parsha to need a balkari for. So I volunteered. I said, I'll be more than happy to go. I'm going to go spend Shabbos in the army, and my job is going to be to go lane and say Divrei Torah, whatever it was. But, so I get there, I lay in Pashat Matas Masay, and then I remember after davening, so a group of the boys who were standing on Shmirah, who had missed Kriyas HaTorah, asked me, could we make another minyan for a second time around for Matas Masay? Sure, no problem. It's a big deal. So Matas Masay four parshas, that was my job. But the other, many memorable parts of that Shabbos. One of the memorable parts of the Shabbos was we came there late Friday afternoon. The boys were finishing all their work and drilling and everything. It was boiling, boiling hot. It was down all the way down in the past Be'er Sheva. And one of my friends from the yeshiva, one of the friends in the army, came up to me. And he said, "Listen," he said, "I have one pair of tzitzis." I said, "I've been running around this pair of tzitzis for the last week. This is filthy, it smells, it's dirty. And I have to wash the tzitzis right before Shabbos. But I'm telling you, the tzitzis, there's no way these tzitzis, even in the sun, there's no way the tzitzis are going to be wearable when Shabbos starts. Can I wear the tzitzis at least tomorrow morning?" He already knew enough to formulate the Shaila. So I said, "Oh, this is it." So I quoted him the Mishneh Berurah. I said, "The Mishneh Berurah says that if the clothing was off limits when Shabbos started, it was too wet, it remains also for the duration of Shabbos." So he said, "No, I'm not going to have tzitzis to wear." I said, "It's more important not to violate a din of muktzah. So you won't wear tzitzis. You won't wear tzitzis. You're not allowed to wear tzitzis at the expense of ilchus muktzah." That's what I told him. So then later on, I had chalish tadas on that, because Pasha says that psach was not correct, because that was called ein lebugad macherim, because the person doesn't have any other clothing, because he only has one pair of tzitzis, ein lebugad macherim. But then I was thinking to myself later on to make myself feel better. Maybe that's not called Ein L'Bugad Mecherim. What's the cool of Ein L'Bugad Mecherim? He's like, "I have nothing to wear. This guy's going to walk around without a shirt on. It's like covered up rios here. So he won't wear tzitzis." I mean, please don't misquote that out of context. So he won't wear tzitzis. Shomer. Big deal. He won't wear tzitzis. It's not that he's mechuyev to wear tzitzis. You know, the mitzvah of tzitzis is when a person is wearing a four-cornered beged, then they're obligated to put strings on. If a person is not wearing the beged, then they're not technically chayev. Now we know there's a mitzvah chassidus, and in the Shulchan Aruch, what's the right thing to do, and to put yourself into an opportunity to do mitzvahs. We'll even say a verse from Moshe Rabbeinu from his Yurtza yesterday. The Gemara says in Sota that Moshe Rabbeinu was wisely plotting to go into Eretz Yisrael. He just had to eat some fruit. The Gemara says, no, he wanted to do the mitzvah to Luis Baritz. So the Mepharshim asked, but he was potter. He was in Chutz Laretz. What the big? Why was he crying to go into Eretz Yisrael to be mafresh trumas and maizvahs? He wasn't chayev. So the answer is, that's a midas chasidus, to want to put yourself into a situation doing mitzvahs. A person shouldn't take the attitude in shmiras and mitzvahs, potter. You should bend over backwards. You should try to do things to make yourself chayev in mitzvahs. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes this, quotes from the Rishonim in the beginning of Chostitzis, that it's not appropriate for a person to take the attitude, well, I'm not wearing the beged anyway, so what's the big deal? No, you should wear the beged, you should go anyway, you should bend over backwards to make yourself chayv in mitzvahs. So I'm not minimizing the significance of wearing tzitzis. On the other hand, I'm not sure. Is that called ein lo beged, ein lo beged macherim? Is that called an ein lo beged macherim in the sense of, it's not like you don't have a shirt, it's not like you don't have a pair of pants, the guy's not walking around undressed, he's just not getting that extra mitzvah of wearing tzitzis. Maybe the Gezer Shavishchar is more important than that. Maybe Chazal would say, listen, don't put on the wet tzitzis. So I'm not sure. Maybe you know, I'm not sure. So if my hesitation maybe is correct, then the psak maybe was correct. If my hesitation was wrong, then maybe my psak was incorrect as well. So I'm not sure. So that's our chir. The psak was 25 years ago. I can't tell exactly how it played out. But my gut feeling at that time was that maybe that should be included in the Gezer of Shema Yischar.
Yeah, and a Friday afternoon tonight, in anticipation, cannot trump Yigal Deis Katzai?
I don't think so.
I can't say, tomorrow I'm going to use that oil for salad dressing?
I don't think so. So a couple of this is all the first half of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that we're not concerned with Gezeirah Shavu Yischot for whatever the different reasons the Mishnah Berurah suggests. That was the first cool of the Mishnah. Then the Mishnah had a second cool. The Mishnah said that one is permitted to hang up the clothing as long as he's not doing it publicly. To do it publicly is an outright violation of Marasayan. To do it privately presumably wouldn't be a problem. So it's clear that this Mishnah is telling us a tremendous kula in Hilchos Marasayan. It's telling us that Marasayan only applies when it applies. It means it only applies when it makes sense, when people actually will see you doing what, quote-unquote, the Aveira, or what they perceive, misperceive to be an Aveira. But if you do it privately, nobody sees it, so the Mishnah says it. The Mishnah says it, that's okay. So the Gemara quickly puts the brakes at that kula, the tenth of the Marmakomos, in the back of the first sheet, so the tenth of the Marmakomos, in Shabbos, Kuf Ben Vav Amabay. So the Gemara comments on this Mishnah, Amar Rabbi the Marav, whenever Chazal prohibited anything because of Marasayan, they prohibited it even in the privacy of one's own home. When literally one room of rooms, even though nobody's going to see it, it's still a problem. So Tanan asks the Gemara, the Mishnah says explicitly, the Mishnah permits you to hang up the clothing in the sun as long as you're not hanging up where people are going to see you. So as long as it's behind your fence and nobody's walking into your backyard, no one's going to see it. So the Mishnah says, Beferish, it's permissible. So this contradicts Rav's statement. So Gemara says, you're right. It does contradict Rav's statement. Tanoi, it happens to be a machlekes atanoim. Tesanya, Shochan Bechama, Valokanakadam, Rabbi Loz, Rabbi Shimon, Oisrin. Whereas the Mishnah presents only the position of the Mekilim, the Braisa fills in the gaps. The Braisa tells us that Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon were both prohibited it. So the Maaseh it's Machlokes HaTanoim, and Rav, the Amir, is siding with the Machmirim. So the question is, how should we paskin now? Based on all this information we just have now, basically these three lines, how should we paskin the halacha? Should we paskin like the Stam Mishnah, or should we paskin like Rav? So here I can hear Svaros Lekan Lekan. On the one hand, we have a rule, halacha stam mishnah. That's the general rule in Pesach halacha, that halacha is like a stam mishnah. If Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, you know, felt to present the mishnah in such a way that it was the seems to be the unanimous vote, so even though there was a dissenting view in Tanoim, but Rabbi Yehuda Nasi presented the mishnah in a certain fashion, that almost always points to the direction of halacha stam mishnah. On the other hand, here the Amorai, particularly Rav, is taking a stand against the Stam Mishnah. So that's also a pretty serious force of Pesach Halacha. So it's unclear just from these 2.5 lines how we should paskin. The Mishnah is pointing in the direction of Lakula. Rav, Rav Yudam Rav, the Amorai are pointing in the direction of Lachumra. So is there anything else? Are there any other Makaras? Are there any other Gemaras that talk about this issue? So there's a Sugi in the 11th on the Marmakamos. the famous din in Daf Yud Beis and Aleph Maseches Avodah Zarah. Yashuv HaKotz Bifnei Avodah Zkichavim. What if a person is walking past an idol and they happen to they get a thorn in their foot and they want to bend down in order just to, you know, to maneuver to be able to get it out. So the problem is when they bend down in front of the idol, that gives off the appearance that they may be worshipping the idol. Obviously, the person is not worth. Person couldn't care less about the idol, but somebody walks by and sees the person bowing down, doesn't look good. So the Gemara quotes a Brais that says Yashuv HaKotz Bifnei Avodah Zkichavim Lo Yishchav Yitlena. You shouldn't bend down and take the thorn out. Because it looks like you're bowing down to the idol. But if it doesn't look like you're bowing down to the idol, we don't know yet why that is or is not true. But mutter. The Gemara, the Braisa says that it's okay. Similar halacha. If a person dropped his money in front of an idol, lo yishchav yitlem. He shouldn't bend down and pick up the money. Once again, mishenir la kibishtachal vadis kichavim, because it looks like you're bowing down to the idol. V'meino nira mutter. And again, if it doesn't give off that impression, then it's permissible. And the Gemara gives off another example. All the same idea, all the same theme, that one shouldn't do things that give off the impression that one is possibly worshiping an idol. So comes the Gemara down to the bottom of the Maram Kamos, the third line from the bottom. So the Gemara begins to analyze what the kula was. The Braisa first says it's Asur, and then the Braisa says three words, remain on Nira. But if it doesn't look that way, then it's okay. So the Gemara towards the third line from the bottom, the middle of the line, my Eino Nira. What does that phrase mean with the Braisa permits it if it's not visible? If it means that you're not seen, there's nobody around. Where says, how could that be? How could you possibly say that it's okay? But Rav made his famous statement that Chadu Chadarim is Asur. So how could you say, how could the Braisa permit you if nobody's there? That should also be included in the Asur of Marisayin. El Eima, we have to revamp it a little bit. It doesn't mean that nobody's seeing you. What it means is that what you are doing doesn't even give off the appearance, even if somebody is watching you, it doesn't give off the appearance of bowing down, i.e., you turned your back, you turned around, you've set aside. It means nobody would walk by but even think in a million years that you're actually bowing to the idol. So the Gemara breathes a sigh of relief. We got out of that those words we made on Nira. The words in Eino Nira we thought meant kipshuto, that it's private, nobody's around. And then the Gemara says, no. It doesn't really mean that. So the question is, what could we derive now from this Shakmatar in the Gemara? So l'chora, from the fact that the Gemara asked the question, v'hamarav, the Amoraim asking, how dare the Braisa, so to speak, how could the Braisa say it's mutter, it's chadu chadarim, and everybody knows what Rav said. Everybody knows what Rav said. There was a stam mishnah against Rav. So why did the Gemara get so tzehit? The Gemara got so excited about this Braisa and said, how could it be? What happened to chadu chadarim? So the chora, from the flow of the sugya, the stam of the shas, it would appear that the Gemara is assuming that Rav is correct. From the fact that the Gemara is jumping from Rav and asking from Rav onto a Braisa, and the Gemara wasn't even Misyaches to the other Shita, even though the other Shita was a Stam Mishnah. I mean, that's quite a Shita not to be Misyaches to, just to ignore. So the simple flow, just the flow of this Sugya in Maseches Avodah Zarah, seems to indicate in the direction of the Chumrah that we're probably going to follow the view of Rav, that Chadu Chadarim is in fact Asur. Is there any other Malkus, any other Gemara that sheds any light on this discussion? So there is a Tosfos in the 12th of the Maram Kamos, Tosfos the Masechet Shabbos, Daf Samachem and Aleph, where Tosfos quotes the dissenting view, Yesh Befarshim, the Ein Halacha Kirav. There was some Rishonim, who they are, some Rishonim held that the Halacha is not like Rav. How do we know? We're showing all the evidence in the direction that Rav is right. Rav is in Amoira, and the Stamadas Shas in Avodah Zarah seems to be supporting Rav. So what led these Yesh Mefarshim to disagree with Rav, to claim that Marisayin is Mutter as long as nobody sees you? And again, this is a major, major question. This Shas happens all the time. That Marisayin is Mutter as long as nobody's watching. So Yesh Mefarshim in Alka Rav, Bidetani Bechulin, based on a sugi that appears in Maseches Chulin, it's a Mishnah Maseches Chulin, Ein Shokhtin Nesok Guma Bishas Aramim, Shlo Yechaka Apikorsim, of a chotzer mutter. So the Mishnah and the Braisa elaborates upon Pshat. The Mishnah says that when one shechts an animal, one should not shecht that the blood collects into a hole. You can't dig a hole and have the blood go into a hole. Why not? Because apparently that was some kind of a goyisha practice, some kind of a pagan kind of a practice. Chakas apikorsim. I don't know enough as to what exactly they were trying to accomplish, but that was considered to be something which was foreign, something which was smacks of a desire, of kfir, of apikorsis, whatever you want to call it. And therefore, one is not permitted to do so, even though that's not my intent. I'm just digging a hole because I just want to dig a hole. So the Mishnah says, no, you're not allowed to do that. Nation Yechakas Epikorsim. But if it's in the privacy of your home, then it's okay. Or it's in your own backyard, then it's okay. So why is it okay? Why is that so? So the simple reading is well, it's the same story. To do it in public when people see you, somebody may be chayshay, they may suspect you of being this pagan, of being this idol worshiper. If you're doing it in your own backyard, nobody's there, so then it's mutter. Why don't we plug in Rav's klal? Rav's klal is, so you see from the stomach of the sugi Masechus Chulin that Rav is rejected. So this was the suas for the Yesh Mefarshim. That lone gemar Masechus Chulin became the suas to be Megill. Says Taisus, Umiyu ain't Zeraya. Says Taisus, not a Raya. The Bechotze Mutta, the Afaroasa Omlanaka Chatzei Rutzarech. No, says Taisus, the reason why it's Mutter in your backyard is because everybody realizes the reason why you're making a hole is because you don't want to dirty your backyard with blood. If a place, you're middle of the street, you don't really care what the street looks like, and you start digging holes to collect blood, who is this guy? This guy must be some kind of a voodoo guy who likes to collect the blood for his idols. So that's the problem. That's a marisayat. But if you're doing it in your backyard, the reason why it's mutter is not because nobody sees you. If I cared, even if people saw you, it would still be mutter. Because everybody realizes that what you're doing something in a specific context. But if you're involved in, you're engaged in an act that if somebody would see you, they would be chayshid you. So even though nobody's around, it's still asar. So this Gemara about b'chotze mutter is not an indication that Rav is not correct. It's just a statement of reality. The statement of the facts are, there's nothing to worry about. Nobody's going to draw any conclusions. Like Marshall Madavadoma. It used to be, not so long ago, a person would go into a treif restaurant, that was like the ultimate marisayin, to walk into a treif restaurant. As much as that. Everybody sees you walking in with a whole business party. Everybody realizes that. Everybody goes, you can misquote those two quotes. You don't have to wait. Since everyone walks the treif restaurant. So, yeah, those are like the pearl lines at some 1 year in yeshiva. So one of the bachurim collected all the shirim from the whole year, took all the lines out of context, and made a whole CD out of a Purim, just to show the rabbi. Said, this rabbi said, those would be two good lines. So today, a guy walks into the treif restaurant, what's the big deal? And everyone realizes that he's not going to eat. So to over here, Tais is saying, if I see a guy digging a hole in the middle of the street, I start to think, hey, what's he doing? Some kind of pagan voodoo kind of stuff. I see a guy digging a hole in his backyard, I realize right away the reason why he's doing it. Make sure that his backyard doesn't get filthy. That's what the blood all over the place. So at the end of the day, we don't have any rayas against Rav. That one Gemara in Chulin was rejected by Tosfos, and the Pashas Advarim is that we do accept Rav. So although there was one opinion in Rishonim, Rav Nisimgo and the Yesh Mefarshim, there are a few Rishonim here and there who rejected Rav. The general consensus in Halach and the Rishonim and Shulchan Aruch is Rav is accepted, Chadu Chadarim is also. Hopefully that's what we have to see next week. Even though Chadu Chadarim is also, are there any times the Chadu Chadarim becomes Mutter? Are there any times when Maris Ayin actually becomes Mutter? So now we go way past just the technical details of Kibbutz B'Shabbes, of Maris Ayin, of Schit, of Fugat. Them, this becomes really a shas topic in terms of when Maris Ayin is a problem, when Maris Ayin is not a problem. Next week, we'll try to continue with that.